How are you all? Welcome everyone. Tonight is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Facilities Committee. I am Councilor Deb Crossley, chair of the committee, and at-large from Ward 5. And to my left is Susan Albright, vice chair of the committee, councilor from Ward 2. Mark Lurito, to her left, councilor from Ward 7. Barbara Bussal-Glaza, who I thought might not be with us because it's school vacation week, but welcome. Ward Councilor from Ward 3, Councilor at Large and President of the Council, Scott Lennon, at Large from Ward 1. Vicki Danberg, Councilor at Large from Ward 6. Cheryl Lappin, Ward Councilor from Ward 8. And our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. We're also joined by Councilor Brian Yates, also at Large from Ward 5, Emily Norton, Ward Councilor from Ward 2, Allison Leary, Ward Councilor from Ward 1, and Ruth Ann Fuller, Councilor at Large from Ward 7. And we are joined by our CFO and Chief of Staff, Maureen Lemieux, and Jim McGonigal, our Commissioner of Public Works, and I'll introduce Juanita Tabert as well, who is our Solid Waste and Recycling Manager, or some such thing. You'll have to prepare your title for me. So we have two subjects tonight. There's more than two items, but two subjects. And the first, for 45 minutes or until 8 o'clock, we're going to be discussing Juanita Tabert's very comprehensive report, Moving Beyond Solid Waste to Sustainable Materials Management. To do this, we have a presentation that I just put under a chair's note, but we have item 12-16 that has been held for a while, which is Councilor Leary, Norton, Salis, Hesselhan, Albright, and Crossley, requesting an update from and discussion with the Department of Public Works Solid Waste Commission on the current status of Newton Solid Waste Management and Recycling Program Operations and Performance Objectives, Future Goals and Objectives, Staffing Program Challenges, and Survey Data due to be submitted to the Department of Environmental Protection. And so, are you both joining us at the table for this presentation? Thank you. And we're also joined by Shane Marks, the Director of Operations for DPW. And I'll let Juanita, are you beginning with us?
Yeah, Juanita's done.
Okay, so no introduction, I just didn't know who was going to introduce. Juanita, would you like to join us at the table or standing or however you'd like to do it? And I assume that everyone has had a chance to review the report, but that you have a presentation, maybe you want to just focus on the highlights, perhaps, and your recommendations.
I will try to be brief. I do have a lot of information in the presentation, trying to put a lot of things in context, but I will try to focus on the recommendations as well. So, yes, I am the City of Newton Recycling Manager, and thank you very much for having me. Last year, there was a resolution passed right as I started with the city that requested a long-term plan to be developed for solid waste and recycling in the City of Newton. Not only starting a new job and kind of getting to know the entire program would that have been extremely challenging, but there's also no central piece of information where all of the different facets of the program were in one place. So I proposed to put that together, and ultimately that ended up being this report. So I'm hoping that this document will guide the process of developing a long-term plan this year. So just starting at the highest, broadest level. This is the materials management hierarchy. Source reduction and reuse is always going to be more preferred than treatment and disposal, with recycling and composting and energy recovery in between them. Treatment and disposal are the least preferred options due to their detrimental effects, primarily on the environment and also on human health. So in Newton, solid waste goes to the Wheeler Brader Millbury Waste Energy Facility, and single stream recycling is processed at the Waste Management Avon Materials Recovery Facility. I do have some data here, 17,785 tons in 2016 for solid waste and 10,358 tons from single stream recycling in 2016. All of our other material streams have independent vendors. So we all know that the city provides both residential service and municipal service. For the residential side, it's curbside collection, the permanent drop-off facility, and then there is a variety of multifamily properties that receive dumpster service from the city, which is somewhat grandfathered in from a number of years ago. And then in the municipal side of things, the city provides service for all city buildings and public schools, city operations themselves, and then public spaces with the Big Valley program. So the services we provide: curbside, solid waste with the blue cart, single stream recycling with the green cart, yard waste collection 41 weeks per year, counting including Christmas tree collection, bulky waste pickup, and there's an appliance and e-waste pickup for SCs. This graph shows our solid waste curbside collection since fiscal year 02. It seems that the city peaked in tonnage around fiscal year 04 and has steadily declined. The noticeable trend right around the 20,000 ton mark is right when the single street, or right when the cart program was introduced in the city. So single stream curbside collection since the cart program has been in place seems to be flatlined, but I would actually argue that due to the lightweighting of materials and the single stream consistency, that we as a city are probably recycling more material and higher volume, but the materials that are being collected weigh less than previous. So plastic bottles are more likely to be in the stream now, and 5-10 years ago it would have been a lot of newspapers and glass bottles. At our permanent drop-off facility, the Resource Recovery Center, we collect 14 different material streams. We provide a great variety of service to residents there. We also have a variety of reuse options there. Again, that's a higher use than recycling. This is just a very broad analysis of the program in general. Some of the strengths include our superb infrastructure, an excellent use of technology. There's a really, there's premium services that this community provides that most other municipalities do not provide. And there's also a strong desire to improve the program. Room for improvement includes education and outreach, which is going to be my primary focus this year. Resident accountability to the solid waste and recycling ordinance is lacking. There's almost no engagement with the commercial sector in the city, and that's definitely an area that could be improved. There's a lack of emphasis on source reduction to reduce the amount of material generated in the first place that we have to manage. There's certainly more materials that could be recovered. There's broader sustainability plans, like what is the carbon footprint of our operations that could be looked at. And I would recommend a change in performance measures, which is in the report, and the development of specific attainable goals. So I tried in the report to tie Newton's program in with the solid waste master plan for the state, which was subtitled A Path to Zero Waste. And that report speaks a lot about shifting the thinking of from the state level to the municipal level down to the individual level to reduce the generation of waste, promote the more efficient use of materials, increase recovery, reuse, and recycling, reduce the amount of waste requiring disposal, reducing the toxicity of the waste that does go to disposal, and improving the environmental performance of the material management facilities that are already permitted by DEP. So, thinking on zero waste, it is behind that notion. However, there are communities in Massachusetts, Nantucket, boast a 91% diversion rate because they do have an anaerobic digester in their community. San Francisco, one of the biggest cities that has put such a huge emphasis on this, they have an 80% diversion rate. And there's other major cities that, while they have not achieved zero waste or even a significant diversion rate, they have developed long-term plans and zero waste goals, and you know, they're gearing up to put those the resources behind doing that. Boston is included in that, and they are expected to work with a consulting firm even later this year to develop a long-term plan focused on zero waste. So, on to the recommendations for improving maintenance programs. I broke it down just by the breakdown in our services, and this is just the order that I go through them in. So, I do want to speak on what improvement means. So, it could be reducing the waste generation, reducing costs, increasing diversion by reuse or recycling, increasing city operational efficiency, increasing communication, participation, and engagement from city staff, from residents, from businesses, from anyone in the community, or meeting compliance or best management practice standards. So any of those would qualify as improvement in the program. So in the overall residential services recommendations, the first one is to develop and implement a long-term education and outreach plan. So I included in the report a one-year education and outreach plan for this year, and while that took me quite a while to put together, it's now my guide for this whole year, and I've been using it almost every day. So I think that the city has a really rich history of having robust education efforts, and I know a number of years ago there was a full campaign to increase paper recycling, and I mean there's still materials in my office and all around the city buildings that I see. There were magnets, and there was a lot of work put into it, and you can tell that. But since that point in time, there hasn't been anything kind of as robust to continue on that track. I also recommend developing and promoting a citywide recovery and waste reduction goal. And I've read about a number of other communities, this size, smaller, some that are bigger, that develop a goal and then they continue to promote it. So at bus shelters or posters in City Hall or at the schools, just to kind of get the community thinking about what they could be doing, and once you reach that individual, that's when you start seeing the impact that really affects things. So, for curbside collection, there's already an effort underway, but I did include it in the report because the bulky waste collection policy is, I feel that the city could be doing much better on that. So, the city imposes a limit, and I put limit loosely, of 5 items per household per week. Anybody in this room, can you say how many times in the last year you needed to get rid of a couch or a mattress? It would probably be a handful of times. So I think it's a little excessive, and that it also doesn't cost anything. There's no disincentive to use the program. And so part of the effort that I'm working on with DEP is to assess how much tonnage is actually coming through that program and what the breakdown of that tonnage is, trying to figure out other outlets for the material that's going through there. I believe that there's quite a bit of furniture that could be put to reuse that ends up just going to disposal. And I also think that there is a bit of abuse that is happening with that program, where neighboring communities charge up to $20 to get rid of a mattress. You know, if somebody has a cousin or a rental property here, they just bring it to Newton and dispose of it at no cost other than the transport. So that's being looked at right now, and recommendations will be coming out from that analysis by June. So I also wanted to include further development. development of infrastructure to manage household organic waste. So this spring, I am going to be putting out some education materials to encourage backyard composting, which is kind of a simple, for the most part, on our end, it's a simple way of encouraging people to manage their own organics. And we can provide them with the tools to empower them to do that. Also, just an educational campaign to reduce food waste in general. There is actually a toolkit that was developed by the US EPA focused on that issue. And I think there's a bit of research from communities that have tried the toolkit, and it shows, you know, a family can reduce their food waste by 50% over 6 weeks. Also to investigate anaerobic digestion potential, not necessarily in the city, but in either a neighboring community or regionally. I do know that there is an anaerobic digester, I believe, set to open this spring in Charlestown. And then also potentially promoting the use of infant food waste disclosures. I did look into a study that was done by MWRA here in Massachusetts with a company that makes garbage disposal, and so we're basically assessing how an increase in organic material through that stream, basically how MWRA could handle that, and they did not have any problems. Something to look into, though, is if it would increase cost. So that was something that was not covered in the study that I read. More on curbside collections. To streamline the management of the city's curbside cart fleet, right now we handle everything in-house except for cart repairs, including the wheels and the lids. Waste management does that, and that's included in our waste management contract. So I have been looking into other options, a couple of vendors that offer that service, or even other options for long-term. In other communities, the community themselves, they don't own the carts. Either the hauler does, and the city essentially leases the cart. So really some type of option to change the status quo. Increasing recovery of household organics by exploring curbside collection options, either the city providing that or running some type of pilot with a vendor providing it, or even drop-off options that would also be included in there. And then also, I think it's really important to reward good recycling behaviors, and there's been a number of studies done that instead of punishing folks for not following the rules or contaminating the recycling cart, that it can increase community-wide rates when you reward folks instead of, you know, slapping them on the wrist. So, for our drop-off site, I'm a big fan of permanent reuse swap shops. So there's other communities in this region that have put these in place. Needham has one and Wellesley has one. And they're basically run by volunteers and the infrastructure is maintained by the city. So there's all sorts of kind of nitpicky in the weeds details that would need to get worked out, but I do think that we have the space. And I don't think that it would be a really heavy lift to get either some type of shed or, you know, they make those tents now that, you know, even though it would be cold in the winter, it would still be protected from the elements. And then also right now, I am working to restructure our household hazardous waste collection program. This isn't a major revamping because it is a great service that we offer to residents. But I do feel that the number of collections was inefficient for city staff, and also it's extremely confusing to residents on when those collection days happen, and it's so hard to communicate those. So I'm trying to institutionalize something simple, like the first Saturday of every month. And so that's what it's going to be this year, starting May 6th, just so you know. And I do want to run those year-round instead of only in the summer months. So some of the multifamily service recommendations: to perform a fiscal analysis to determine the costs and benefits of the city providing service to multifamily properties. when I first started here and I read the ordinance, I was struck that there's not a specific cutoff to the number of units that the city provides service for. So there's a lack of consistency in the city to provide dumpster service. There are some very large apartment complexes that the city pays for collection for, which in other communities that does not happen. So I think that is something that could definitely be looked into. So as I sit there, setting a limit, but also even understanding what properties the city does or does not provide service for. I know the ones that we do provide service for. I don't have a percentage of how many apartment buildings we provide service for versus not providing service for. Within city buildings, I think that there's a lot of room for improvement in evaluating, updating, and implementing a waste prevention policy and program. So I uncovered this study that was done a number of years ago. I mean, it was like 2002. So while the information may need to be updated to account for things like technology and changes in the waste stream since that point in time, the strategies that were recommended to get employees engaged in waste reduction and to kind of have them more invested in reducing the amount of tonnage that comes through the city, the strategies still apply. So I thought that was something to update and potentially implement. Assessing the waste collection services of city buildings to reduce pickups and costs, I think that this would be kind of a comprehensive survey, but I don't think that right now, you know, city buildings like, say, the schools, they don't necessarily need trash collection every single day year-round, so it may need to be just looked at on a daily basis by someone to figure out a cyclical pattern of when there is a higher amount of waste collection or a lower amount to reduce those pickups. And then also, if recycling was increased, then the number of trash pickups would be decreased, and we pay less for recycling pickups than trash pickups. Working on illegal dumping is certainly something that we deal with on a regular basis, but I don't have a good gauge for how much time or the financial impact of illegal dumping, so figuring out some sort of tracking mechanism for that, but also even just putting physical deterrence in place, like locks and cameras to discourage illegal dumping would be a step in the right direction. So also for city buildings, mandating recycling and responsible material management as a job duty for all city staff. I don't think that that's something right now that's talked about when a new staff member comes on board. And I know that there are some, you know, progressive companies that, you know, they may have a two-hour training just on how the recycling and composting works within their campus facilities. So that's just an example that makes me think, you know, when employees start here, they're not really told that that's an expectation. Also to determine municipal dumpster contamination to guide internal education, this could be done by doing quarterly audits of dumpsters, and it could be in tied in with the assessment on the number of pickups needed. Also to continuously increase recovery of materials and reduce waste generation by evaluating current practices and always finding missed opportunities. So, you know, is there a material that we're using a lot of that we end up with a lot of waste that could be put to a reuse by, you know, a company that needs a high volume of something? Or is there a material that we could find a recycling outfit, a recycling venue for that right now it just goes into the waste stream because it's not accepted via single stream recycling? For public space recommendations, exploring the development of a formal carry-in carry-out policy for public spaces that do not have city manager collection. This ties in with illegal dumping. And then, again, tracking or better understanding the time and effort spent on disposing of waste at those sites. Improving education and outreach to reduce contamination and increase recycling at the Big Belly unit. I have been in communication with Parks and Rec to do that. And it's not in my education plan for the year, but it could certainly be added to it. Mandating recycling for all permitted events held on city property. They're requiring a recycling plan in the permit application. I know of several large communities that do this, and they also enforce recycling at those events. There's even room for expansion on this. I know of communities that actually purchase those foldable recycling bins. They're called clear stream bins, and they actually just rent them out to events like this so that they have enough recyclables, but it doesn't put the cost on, you know, say somebody's holding a wedding at a park. So within city operations, improving materials management and project planning by including preferred materials management strategies in bids and internal project planning. So thinking about a project from the very beginning and thinking about what waste will be generated by the project and figuring out how to reduce that as much as possible. I do think to some degree that is done, but there's room for improvement. And then increasing sorting and recovery outlets for project waste. So things like stumps or concrete or wood, again, but if we have a large volume of that material, there may be someone in the private sector or a different community that could use that material for something. So education outreach, as I mentioned, the plan is in the report for this year. I think we do a great job with communication tools that we have, but I'm working to spread the word about those materials, particularly the Recycle Right Newton app and web platform that was launched in November. I've also been working really hard to update the city website, but it's quite a labyrinth. So that's something that I am hacking away at day by day. Updating our print materials, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. I think there's a lot of really great materials that are still applicable, just need to be updated for, you know, various small changes. I am doing some direct outreach efforts. I have been able to hire a half-time administrative staff person that I'm primarily setting on education and outreach. And I have set her goal to be one event per month to just one-on-one with people. So I suggested, you know, setting up a table at the lobby of the library and informing people that the app exists. And, you know, there could be some type of contest or something along those lines to get people to download it and use it. And then she's also going to be reviving our social media accounts that have been dormant for a year and a half. So this is a list of the accomplishments that I've been able to do in 9 months. So initially I focused on improving the resource recovery operations, cleanliness, organization, improving some of the collections there, and that's an ongoing process, but I do think that I've been able to make a lot of headway there. Getting a grasp on program costs and our waste management contract is a huge contract, so it's been a process, and developing a relationship with them, I think that, again, they provide a great service to us, and we just want to hold them accountable for, you know, what they've promised on our end, or on their end. I've added e-waste collection at the Resource Recovery Center, addressed curbside compliance consistency, which is, again, part of our waste management contract. As I mentioned before, the ACHW collection operations, I developed this report. I applied for and received two NEST DEC grants. There was a fiscal grant totaling $33,500 that will be primarily for education efforts, and the in-kind technical assistance grant that is affecting the bulk waste policy. I assisted in reconvening the Solid Waste Commission monthly meetings. They started back up in September, and I think they've been pretty productive so far. There's a lot of enthusiasm and energy in them, and yeah, we're going to use this report and hopefully start working on the long-term plan.
Pretty good. Allison did that?
Yes, Allison has done it as well.
representing the council.
I implemented the recycle right meeting app in November. I joined the Mass Recycle Board and the Mass PSC, which is the Product Stewardship Council for Massachusetts. So I'm engaging at the state level with, I know Newton has previously been engaged at as well. And then turning to education efforts in 2017. So this ties to a lot of the recommendations. You know, developing a long-term plan, applying new performance metrics and data collection, increasing educational efforts, the backyard composting campaign. I do plan to next month send out a full city mailer with a comprehensive program guide. And this is, again, just revising a document that was sent out a number of years ago. The bulk waste assessment and continued program analysis and possibly working on the plan to implement a permanent swap shop. So moving in the right direction, but a long way from reaching zero waste this year. So that's all I have. I'm happy to answer questions to the best of my ability, and feel free to contact me, and download the app if you don't have it. It's really good.
A lot of questions. I'm going to get everybody. Cheryl was first, and then I'm going to ask you all to raise your hands again. I just want to say, a point of personal privilege, I guess, is I was so impressed when I read this report. It really addressed, does not solve everything, but it addresses all of, or at least all of the concerns I could think of. Yes. And I just want to say how impressive this amount of work is, in my opinion, over this amount of time.
Thank you very much.
And so, actually, there's a couple of folks here who do have to leave at 7:45, so if there are counselors who want to have something to say, I think I saw Allison and Emily.
Yes. I think what I'll do is, I have a couple of quick comments and questions, but I'll write mine up and I'll copy the committee on it.
Great.
So that, because I do have to leave shortly, I know that this is going to go on for quite a while. But I just want to second that this is an outstanding report, and we're missing a tremendous job, and I'm sure it's going to be really appreciated, because you are above and beyond. I mean, you really are. And we're very lucky to have you, and I just want to say that, because there's so many important people in the room. And and also that we really could use two more of you if you really want to be serious about reaching a goal. A couple of things that jumped out of me at the report real quickly was how sanitized it was regarding the our incineration. And if you really look at what zero waste is, it's really incompatible with incineration if you look at the peer review study definition and what the goals are. So I would say that, and that you should really look at ways we can get away from having to, you always tell nothing, it's long term, but that would be one of my goals that I do think we'll spell out enough in here. And then a couple of things, and the education and outreach is a priority, and you know that, and I think that should be really looked at closely so that we can start working with, you know, I see a lot of overflowing carts and I see a lot of material going in there to engineer that.
Yeah.
And then one of the low hanging fruit I think would also be we don't require businesses to recycle. And I think that should be something we should look at carefully. And I'll withhold the rest of my comments and I'll send them to the committee and hopefully it is.
Thank you. Emily?
Thank you. So I'm embarrassed that I haven't met you before. My first job out of college was a freshman coordinator for the city of Burlington, Vermont, and I'm covering clean mandatory. So I think this really is terrific, and you are top notch, and we are so, so lucky to have you. So like I said, I'm glad I haven't met you before now. The one thing that really resonated for me, one thing we did when it became mandatory, because I had a really brilliant DPW director as my boss, was to help businesses comply with the law. We had a seal of approval program, so that whole carrot versus stick occurred. They loved it. That was before internet. They put their names in the newspaper. We had a seal once a month. The mayor would hand out these awards. I was on the news all the time, since the local celebrity and recycling coordinator. I wore a former Broadway costume designer, so I had a box I wore in the
Utilities are financially incentivized to help residents, businesses, etc., use less energy. They're financially incentivized to do that, which is sort of counterintuitive. I don't know if any waste management company, if there is a possibility for that, that they could be incentivized so that the less waste we generate, even the less recycling we generate, because we know that recycling, as you pointed out very accurately, uses a lot of energy and is really the lowest tier.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea if that's even a possibility, but that might be something to look into so that they could get a bonus, you know, to help us accomplish all these goals. And then the last thing is just enforcing general trade, emergency means, what is allowed to go in landfills, what's not, but I know that this, whether it's here or elsewhere, in restaurants and businesses, it looks like there's not a lot of recycling, which is always even, and I thought it was not allowed to go in landfills, so I don't know if there's something more we can do in this to help the lobby enforce.
So one quick thing, like Emily was referring to waste bans, which we've been in place for many, many years now. But the organic waste ban, that I think it's sort of not enforced at the state level that much, but it does require if you produce one ton or more of organic waste a week, you're supposed to that's not supposed to go into your waste bin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if particularly New York, or if they do produce one ton.
Schools are exempt from that
one. They are exempt.
Yeah.
Okay, so we wouldn't have that. There's no other area that would produce that much organic waste, right?
Not with any of the city buildings.
Okay, thank you. So Cheryl was first, and then I took it down in this order. Susan, Mark, and Vicki. How's that?
Well, first of all, hugely impressed with the report. And really impressed with what you've done in the last 9 months. I mean, it's pretty impressive. That could have been a roadmap that you would have done over, you know, 5 years. So really, really impressive. On the outreach, I think is really important, especially composting. People don't understand that, and I think the more you could educate people, that would be great. And you mentioned the condos, which have been an issue for years, because the reason we pick up some and not others is because in their special permit, it's specifically noted, you know, maybe we gave them, you know, extra FAR or whatever, and that's why we don't. So, but it is pretty inequitable, and I think you know the ones that we do. And there was somebody did a report a while ago. I'll try to, it could have been one of the condos in my area, but they had the list of the ones that we did. And I'm sure assessing can help you, can get you the other large ones in the city.
Yeah, there's a lot of information on that can be pulled together. I just think it would be a time-consuming effort to really gather it all. And I know that my predecessors also put together some information on apartment buildings that are in the city that are not currently serviced by the city. So I know that that work has
so you have that.
Started. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Because they, you know, what we hear is we pay taxes and we don't get that service. So I think that, you know, we again should look into it. I know we have before, but it was cost prohibitive before. But then we talked about also passing on the charge to people. You know, but a lot of them would like to recycle.
Mm-hmm.
And they have private recycling. So, That might be, I mean, I don't, you know, it would be, might be cost neutral if we could figure that out. But.
Yeah. I would think, so the DEP in-kind assess, or in-kind grant that I received, what I would hope to do is apply for that again and have them help us with that effort assess what is actually the picture in Newton right now and help us in putting together some policy recommendations or changes. And that's basically what they're going to do for our bulk program. Mm.
Okay, terrific, but really impressive. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm going to second what everybody's been saying. And I told you before the meeting that I think it's a publishable report, I really do. And that I think that we should be presenting at the MMA next year about what we've done and what our emphasis has.
Yeah.
So for sure, along with Rick and Ken and
I'll have the resolution.
Not on snap.
No.
Some sewers are stormwater.
Yes. So I'm going to step into the outreach, more outreach on composting and that kind of thing. And my personal recommendation is to do some YouTube videos on how to do it, because I'm a visual learner. When I've had to do something, I go look on YouTube and find something that'll teach me how to do it. And now that I've seen you give this report, I absolutely think you should do some
YouTube.
Put them on the city website. We've got a city website, a YouTube channel of our own.
That's a really good idea.
I'm going to watch it as soon as you get it up.
It's not something that I had considered yet, really, at all. But I think something like a training would be very functional.
Yep.
And I don't think that would really serve intent or time and time to even put it together. So.
You might even have fun doing it.
I have fun doing it.
About the special permits, you know, I think Mark, well, you probably remember better than I do, but I think every large project has to have their own pickup now. Is that correct?
I think that's right.
So that must have started at some point, and I was on Land Use for a long time, and it already was in place.
Right, and that's what I mentioned. I believe that a lot of the larger properties are kind of grandfathered into the system.
Yeah.
So I just think that it's something to look at, because it is a pretty big cost that the city bears at this point in time. And I mean, again, there's other communities that set a limit of, you know, anything with 6 or less units, the city will provide service for. Yeah. And so it just creates a more equitable system.
So a recommendation for you would be to think about what other land use issues could you make policy recommendations to the land use committee. Please do X, Y, and Z when you're doing a permit for a village business or for a residence or something. What policies can the land use committee help you implement? So something else to think about.
Another W.
And also for us, I'm thinking, you know, you have a lot of things that you have to do in that list. There must be things that we need to do as a council. Like maybe in the budget get you another staff person. And I noticed that your title is recycling coordinator, but you clearly do more than that. Someone should be making sure that's a bad problem. But not that you should do less, but that, you know. So what policy items are there that you want us to discuss and think about? You know, a whole action list for us, for adopted items for our discussion. You know, and what, so besides policy issues, what budget items, you know, an action list for us, not just for yourself.
Okay.
That would be a request for you. Thank you.
Great
job.
Mark?
You know, this is really an outstanding report, and clearly you're doing tremendous work. I mean, you've heard it from everybody else. I'm not necessarily the person who offers the most praise all the time, so I think this is great. And it's just clear you're hitting it out of the park. So a few questions and actually some thoughts I want to pick up on what Susan suggested as well. First of all, in terms of policies, if there are things that if we permit a commercial development, for example, or we permit any kind of larger residential development, you should be talking to the planners, particularly Alexandra Nance, who's our chief you know, planner for current planning, and also talk to Director of Planning, Bonnie Keith. If there are things that you want incorporated as standard policy, like thou shalt put in recycling when you have a certain type of commercial building, we can do that. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of authority there, and that can help your job a great deal, and I think that's really very important. But what we need, because we won't do it on our own, is we need the language from you. What would you want? And it then needs to be language that's enforceable by inspectional services. So as you work with probably Alexandra and then the Commission of Inspectional Services, try to craft maybe standard language we can use, things that would be enforceable. I mean, I'll leave that to you, but that would be exceptionally helpful to us. I echo also what Susan said about, you know, if there's changes in the ordinances, tell us so we can try to docket items and make the appropriate changes. You had a tremendously long list of accomplishments that you've made, but other things that you're trying to achieve, it might be, just as a suggestion, it might be useful to try to figure out what you're going to accomplish in 6 months or a year, and you're not going to accomplish every single thing on that list, and things that would be kind of clear, achievable goals so that when you come back in a year to us and report to where you are, you could say, this is what my goal was this year, this is what I accomplished. I just think you have so much on there, because you had a cabinet, frankly, a very, I don't want to say problem, but you had a situation that you need to grapple with. So then I have one final question, and I think it's probably directed more at Maureen than you. We have co-sustainability directors in the city now. A lot of this work seems to me is sustainability. So what is the interrelationship, if any, between our co-sustainability directors and what's being done here? Well, they're not here, right? And so what is there, I mean, we have a sustainability, now a combined sustainability position in the executive office, and we have, everything I see here is sustainability, pretty much. So what's the interrelationship?
To be honest, there has not been much. The sustainability director, the co-director has just started.
But we've had someone filling the position for 2 years now.
Yes. So the person who's been filling that, Andy Savage, has been focused up to this point on the assessment, residential assessment of their property. So working to get, the goal was to do have 1,000 property owners and have their property assessed and implement efficiency saving measures. He has done a lot of work on the solar. So he was not focused on recycling before, but we were, you know, obviously when he didn't work out on this report, when he didn't know we certainly think that it was terrific. And now there's that, and I think what is the beginning of a roadmap of how we begin to really put the building together. Plus our co-director, as you mentioned, comes to us from GPU and has a great background. And so I think you're absolutely there on it. A lot of this is all about.
So Maureen, I'm going to offer you a constructive suggestion and perhaps constructive criticism here. The work that Juanita is doing seems to me quite appropriately under DPW's oversight, but very broad and very far-reaching. The work you're describing of making sure that we have solar in individual homes, while laudable, does not seem to me at all a kind of a cabinet-level type position, and could frankly be easily done under the supervision of the commissioner or his assistant. So I, for one, would want to see a lot greater coordination between our central sustainability directors and really the wonderful work that's going on here. Okay?
Yeah. I'll just mention that as a side topic that's somewhat related, I think it would be helpful in that vein of thinking to revisit the job description for the sustainability directors. We had one going into it a couple of years ago, or how many years it was, and the job description clearly has changed at the direction of the administration, and this might be a good time looking at a broader range of things that we're doing in the city as well to revisit that. Emissions was counting emissions, whether it's from waste management or whether it's from gas leaks, which I know is something else they've been working, whether it's sustainability directly, is, you know, an inclusive or broad topic. So
I'm all set, thank you.
Okay, I have Vicki, Ruthann, and then Barbara.
I just want to echo again what a wonderful job you've done in the time that you've been here. It seems like you should have been here for 5 years to have looked at this. On the topic of staff training, I think that's just a great idea. I love Susan's idea of creating some YouTube videos so that maybe across the schools, across the city itself, it be part of staff training that everybody be exposed to the importance of the work that you're doing and increasing our recycling efforts. The reward program, I'd like to learn more about that because I think that it sounds like a great idea. Emily's comments about what she was working on and as far as rewards are concerned, I think we could benefit from tremendously. Organic waste. Do you have any idea? I'm sure you must have some idea about the tonnage, the percentage that is organic in all of the waste that we collect. What percentage might that be?
So I don't know the exact figure. I believe it's about between 20-25%, and that's from a state characterization study that was done within the last 5 years. And it was part of the driver for the commercial organic ban for the state. And my impression of at the state level is that they plan to make that commercial organic ban, you know, slowly more inclusive, like to include the schools in a couple of years, and then to lower the numbers so that it applies to more businesses, and you know it might even impact our city buildings if it was dropped down to a half a ton or something along those lines. So that's what I know about the numbers at this moment.
I think I remember from somewhere the statistic of a 200-seat restaurant would be expected to generate a ton of organic waste in a week, so that would be the threshold. But if 25% of our waste is organic, then that is a really important place for us to look in the future. I think that's about it. There's multifamily we touched on. I think that's an important thing. I understand that in the future, in the past, we had grandfathered multifamilies that were built many years ago. But I think it might be time for us to look at that program and whether you know, what it's costing us and how we can better handle it in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Compared to other municipalities that don't have women on staff, don't have a park program, don't have a permanent drop-off facility. Like, Waltham does not have a permanent recycling center. They are putting recycling carts in place, but they don't have a track limit. They don't have any type of disincentive to produce or generate trash. And, you know, I drive through there on my commute in, and on the track day for my commute, there's this single-family home with 8 beds of, you know, 2 beds of garbage. And so I think the cart system that was put in place here really put a cap on the amount of generation of trash. And the disincentive by the pay-for overflow beds, it works. It definitely works. And so overall, I think that Newton is definitely above average in program services provided, in recycling capture rates, and in reducing waste generation. I think we're headed in the right direction on everything.
Thank you, Jeff. Other question, and it's a serious connection to Mark's question. You've listed so many things that we can and should and will do moving forward, and you're working really hard on the education and outreach. But if there were 2 or 3 of these that you said, gosh, these are the ones we should really dig in, what rises the most important right now?
Well, the things that drew my attention, I have already started working on. So, like, the bulk assessment and getting the DEP grant to really work on that and figure out a policy solution that would work for this community. Other than that, I mean, the assessment for the commercial properties, I think, would be a really good idea, but again, kind of a time-intensive, staff-intensive project. So to do it well and to understand, again, a policy solution that would work for all the stakeholders in the current system.
I assume that would mean those who are getting it for free would have to pay for that big policy difference.
That would be the right solution. I mean, I would say there's different options, definitely. It could be something like allowing them time to plan for things like that, to fund down the current policy, something along those lines. But also to, I don't know, I guess I think that there are other options, though, besides just for the word tab on that.
And how the organic and composting, how high is that in the list of things that we should be
considering? So I would say that it's pretty high. And my effort this spring is focused around increasing backyard composting. So the city offers compost bins. And through the state grant program, the recycling dividends program, they this year have incentivized communities to subsidize the cost of compost bins. So right now, the city sells them at cost. And so it's $55 for one of the styles and like $43 for the other style. For some folks, that might still be a financial barrier or even cost prohibitive as far as how committed they are to making that effort. So we plan to subsidize that cost, and that's from our grant funding, and we will also receive grant funding by making that policy change to the tune of $4,000 just for making that price drop. So I'm hoping that by promoting that lower price, and I do plan to work with, the DEP has residential compost coordinators that do workshops for free. So I plan to invite them in the spring and in the fall, host community composting workshops to increase participation and increase engagement on that. And I also plan on doing things like a billing search just to get it out to as many folks as possible, encouraging them to manage their own organics, which really lessens the amount of material that the city has to manage. but it just, it makes the whole operation more efficient when folks that used to need yard waste pickup every single week may only need it, you know, once a month, because it would just be too much easier for them to compost. But it certainly cut down on the rest of the chain of how the material is handled every step of the way, and of course the carbon footprint for each of those steps.
Thank you. Along with just a quick point of information, one of my questions going through the 56%, and since Suzanne brought it up, does that include yard waste?
It does not include yard waste. Okay. I'm not sure those numbers from the table, that's pulled straight from the DEP's report that they, so every year communities have to report in data to them, and so I actually just completed that on February 15th.
So you need to get it?
I'm not 100% sure that their formula is correct on how to calculate that. Okay. So I don't think that our rate is
that high.
I didn't want to ask. From my calculation, it's about 38%.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very important. That seems like an important thing to get figured out right away.
I mean, that speaks a little bit to my desire to get away from that number, because I think it's distracting to think about a recycling rate as a percentage, because it always goes to the question, okay, well, what was included in it and what wasn't included in it, versus paying attention to the number that I posted before was, 1,237 pounds of waste to trap generated per household served in the community each year. That's a number that you can comprehend. Like, wow, I produced 1,200 pounds of trash last year? That seems like a lot. And so it connects the individual to their behavior, and just even in the slightest, 3 seconds that they may see it or read it, hopefully, will serve some level of engagement to, make a slight change in, does this go under recycling? Oh, yeah, let's recycle that.
Okay, thank you. And Barbara?
Thank you. Thank you very much for writing for lay people to understand. And I won't go over what everyone else has said, but I do want to say I love the idea of the permanent swap shop. Can I ask anything? Yeah. Permanent swap shop sounds great. And just in terms of the education, which I know you're going to do a fantastic job on, but I was, when we took that tour of Rumford Ave, I was really struck by how much I personally did not know you could bring to Rumford Ave. So just as one part of the education piece that I think people don't quite know what we have there as a resource.
YouTube.
Do you want to make a video about it?
Awesome.
And then I wonder, in terms of pilots, et cetera, and some people are never going to be convinced to compost in their backyard, I think, whether we might at some point do some sort of pilot about picking up compost, or picking up organic, as they've been doing in many cities, as I'm sure you know. I think that's something to think about, if that's at all feasible.
Definitely. I think doing something like a pilot to better understand, the pros and cons, I think that there's a lot of room for potential there. And, whether that's with a grant effort or some type of RFP process, I'm not entirely certain, but I do hope that that would go into the development of the long-term plan. And that could be something, a short-term goal, like within the next 2 years to launch a pilot program.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Just to say what everyone else said, Lane did a great job on this. The one thing that did jump out in observation was how large that appendix was and how many people were picking up trash and recycling costs. I mean, I know for the longest time we've done special permits, we've been inserting that. I mean, since I've been on the council, I mean, I know condo complexes that have been built were curious why it wasn't being picked up. So when I saw that list, I did a double take in how basic that was. So I think that that's you know, I know you have it pretty high on the list, but, you know, it was quite a considerable cost. So I think that's something we should definitely look at. Okay. Thank you for all
I have just a couple quick questions. I sent you some notes, and I can hand you this with more notes in it. About a large concept, but a couple quick questions. So, since we do incinerate right now, and it's a waste of energy, but it has toxic byproducts, and we talked a lot about finding sources for recycling. Do we, and is it in our purview, to recycle the fly ash that is the byproduct, which I know can be used, for example, in concrete mixes, but I didn't know if there's a program for dealing with that toxic material, making it inert.
So I know that there has been efforts to address that because it's, you know, the concept of waste to energy seems very nice. Like, oh, let's burn our garbage because we produce energy from it. It's a fuel source. But you do end up, particularly in the last, you know, 30, 40 years, as plastics have become more pervasive in our culture, you are burning these synthetic materials that do create these very toxic byproducts. And then there's all sorts of things that are banned from disposal that end up in incinerators. So there's incentive programs to keep things that have mercury in them out of incinerators, which is actually how our mercury device collection is paid for. It's paid for through a program by Wheelabrator. We basically get reimbursed for anything we collect. I would say it's not within the city's purview to manage the fly ash for the facility that we take our waste to. That's not to say that it's not something that could be considered in the next contract or something along those lines.
Yeah.
That they either, I don't know what we would say to them, you know, what are you doing to address this issue, or, you know, what data can you provide to us on the toxicity of this material, you know, kind of their long-term planning around that. But the material from the Wheelabrator facility, my understanding is that it is just going through an ash landfill at this point. It's not being put through any type of beneficial reuse.
Great. Okay. Thanks. And then the thing, you mentioned it really kind of casually in here, but I've actually heard from a number of people, including Allison, of course, but others, just people who are at schools and have noticed the trash pickup, that the recycling and the trash is going in the same truck, that it's not getting picked up separately.
Dumpsters?
Or school dumpsters, because they see some contamination, perhaps. I don't know. Or they come with one truck. There's not two trucks. I'd love to get a more, not that you're not careful, but I mean, you have to be actually have eyes on the prize here. So, and I've heard this at, that our Parks and Rec department who picks up at the park is not sorting the waste. And, you know, that we need a, do we need a double? You mentioned something in here about a truck, a split truck.
Just truck.
They are.
And what happens at our parks about this, so we need one to talk about. We met with Allison along the way while we were working on the report. And then together, Jim and I and Juanita and Bob DeRubis and Elaine Gentile sat down to figure out how could we really deal with this. Because we did know, and the issue was that our people who were collecting, our Hackamas people who were collecting, if they saw any contamination at all, they were taking those bags and throwing them in with the trash.
Mm-hmm.
And so why don't you talk about how they're done for...
So what we came up with as a solution to at least try out is to have the Parks and Rec truck pick up recycling separate from trash, because that was the issue, and to definitely avoid at all costs mixing the two in any way that, you know, they would not be separated again. And so what's happening now is that the recycling that's collected from the big bellies is put into the single stream dumpsters at Rumford. So the trash that comes out of the big bellies is also dumped at Rumford on the municipal side. And so my concern with that system is that the reason that Parks and Rec was doing that is because there is genuinely a lot of contamination in the big bellies. I've heard that it's also a problem that other cities have with any public space recycling. It's certainly something that I hope to address with communication, education, outreach efforts. But right now we're kind of in a let's examine how well this change is working. And I would say right now the jury is out to see if it's going to be a long-term solution, but at least the initial change was put in place so that Parks and Rec is no longer mixing those two together. It is completely out of the question to expect them to, like, no one's asking anyone, and it's a safety risk, you know, no one's going to have anybody sort the material that's actually coming out of the big bellies. The best thing that we could do is to prevent the contamination level from being so high.
I get it. So there's a big education piece there. So a couple more comments, and we don't need to discuss it now because we do need to wrap up and move on to our next subject. One is, I'm thrilled that you have been able to hire a half-time administrative assistant. That actually makes me feel a lot better as I look through the long list and so forth. But, so we're heading into budget, and I imagine we're going to see what you're requesting for the next year, or how you're building the budget for this department with grants and your half-time person and so forth. But along the lines of what Mark said, as we're looking ahead, 6 months, a year, 2 years, whatever, what would the goal be for staff in the department and or resources that you might need to achieve some of those goals? Assuming you could have them, you know, what would the difference be in how quickly we could achieve some of those goals? So not just what do you think you can do yourself, but with the half-time assistant, but a little bit broader view. And then my final thing is I've talked with them a number of times and Maureen in December about master planning for our DPW operations, and it came up over and over again in here as you talked about a swap shop, a sorting operation, an anaerobic digester, and even a limited composting operation. And all of those things require space. And we may never have enough space for composting, because we've had that discussion, but you bring it up again, and I think, you know, if we're looking at all the sites we have available to us across the city, and what's the best way to lay out operations across the city, and what's the best way to map our site, you know, those things I would hope would get put into the mix if we're going to do, if and when we get to do a, and I hope we do, get to do one very soon, a feasibility assessment of what is the most efficient way to map our sites and our operations across the city. So these things that you pull out for your department, I think, ought to be in that mix.
Just on one thing that Jeff said in respect to the second point about if you need more staff. Another way to spin the chat on that is put in an appendix to your report. What is it costing us? And give us some history and the numbers for the solid waste, the recycling, and the bulky waste, and the other categories. And if you had additional staff and could train us to reduce our waste and reduce our recycling, if you add another staff person, you can save $200,000 because solid waste will go down. So it's a current cost, and then if we manage and it may be just like adding parking control officers the more we add.
in older land. It's all good in the land.
So that's okay. So if we could wrap this up at this point, I would entertain a motion to hold. A motion to hold from Councilor Albright. All in favor? Unanimous. Thank you very, very much. Thank you all for your work and your presentation and your staying with us. 1491. Okay. So while the room is clearing, we have Verizon Wireless here this evening. We are hoping to vote forward several of the petitions for putting wireless cellular equipment on hold in the public way. We did get a letter, I forget when, but it was recently withdrawing one of the petitions. The one on Dudley Road where the equipment would be in front of a resident. Is that the fellow who left?
I think it's scheduled
for 8 o'clock, so we are 15 minutes over. So, where did the attorney go? Into the record. And I'll just say we have three items before us where a piece of one of them is withdrawn. And then I'm hoping we can vote them tonight.
Do you have that letter?
We did all receive that letter, right?
No, I emailed it.
Oh, you emailed it?
No, okay.
So the Dudley Road petition has been withdrawn. And the others, we need to vote through the full council no later than March 31st. I signed a tolling agreement extending the time period that Alan prepared. Verizon Wireless agreed that we should have until March 31st. So that means it has to be voted through council. So, Alan, would you like to join us as well? Alan Mandel from the law department is here, and he has been in close communication with Betsy Mason of Verizon Wireless, who probably thought we were going to talk for another 15 minutes. There you go.
Hello, Betsy.
Yes. Would you like to join us? Asking if you and Alan both would join us at the table. And I'll read the first item. 249-16 is the telco petition for grant of location for wireless communication equipment and existing utility pole in Ward 8 at Dudley Road and Hay Road. And again, the Dudley Road petition has been withdrawn.
Yes.
So we are talking about the petition only at Hay Road at pole number 1368. And so all these petitions have been before us once before. Would you like to remind us of any of the particulars of this? And then what I'd like to do is I know that you and Alan have been in close contact talking about and agreeing to, I believe, the conditions that we suggested imposing on this petition, well, these three petitions only, as we are in the process of developing design guidelines for this equipment. And so none of the petitions that you are moving, hopefully move ahead with, are positioned in front of anybody's dwelling. So, and the poles have been approved by the pole owner. So, let me... You go.
Okay, I'll be very brief. Basically, yes, Dudley Road site has been withdrawn without prejudice. Just, you know, we listen to the abutters, Verizon's radio frequency engineering folks still believe that's the best spot for what they want to do, but we're just going to give it a take. So we're getting on that one. I think that it's fair to say that we will be looking for another site in the vicinity, just because there are coverage capacity issues there that we want to try to address. Keeping in mind the discussion that's gone with the original proposed location, we'll try to find the best location. So that leaves us tonight with, as you said, three proposed sites, petitions for grant applications for three sites. One at the intersection of Hay Road and Hanson Road. One on a traffic island, the traffic island along the Center Street, Cabot Street, Sargent Street intersection. And then one at the intersection of Deborah Road and Dublin Road.
Okay. I only read one into the record, so we'll pick up the first one.
Okay.
But I think to preface this, as Attorney Mason is aware, that subcommittee on wireless communications has met four times so far. We also met most recently with a potential consultant who has drafted a proposal to us that needs work so that it's meaningful to us. But we did learn a number of things that are very interesting that we hope to explore when we figure out how to use this consultant. One is, for example, at least how I heard it, and please help me if I get this wrong, or help me in any case. So there are several ways to provide the level of service that Verizon is interested in providing. Some are more or less expensive. You either have to have a tower condition, or you have that has a broader range of service. And this is according to the consultant and someone else in our fire department who specializes in this sort of thing. Or you need multiple small antennas that get mounted on poles and other things. So what the consultant said, and I think Alex Tatis confirmed, is that tower of the type, which is a 70 or 80 foot monopole, is about the equivalent of 17 of these individual small devices mounted lower on a telephone pole. Okay, so now there's, and I know nothing about this. That's just how I heard it. Towers have been denied in the past. Because towers require a building, or have in the past required a building next to them, some kind of a large shed to house the supporting equipment. It's complicated. What the consultant and Alex Tatis, who's our staff in the fire department, said is that it is possible now to put the equipment shed underground. And that has been, as Cheryl said, in Ward 8 in particular, when a tower was proposed for this very area and was denied because the shed was effectively putting a building next to the tower. These things can now be put underground. They're called duct banks, and we've seen that happen throughout the city in public ways for other kinds of equipment that we've given grant applications to. Remember one in Ward 6, we put in the triangle and landscapes around and so on. So the reason I'm raising this is not to get into the weeds, but just what we started thinking about is it might be a better idea if we can figure out how to use the consultant along with our own staff is to come up with a plan for the city that is proactive, where we can help direct working with the providers where the best places for these things are. It's probably a huge task, but it's just given that we've been told and we're already hearing more proposals are coming forward and among competitive providers, that this might be a smart thing for us to do. I am not competent to be part of such a situation for very much longer, but I do think we need professional help in order to do this and have all the stakeholders in the city involved in some of the decision making. And maybe it takes a long time as we are on the other hand, allowing some of these things in the interim, according to a set of design guidelines that Alan has drafted. But again, this needs some more time, and this involves some policy-making decisions on our part. So leave that as it may for now. We have three petitions before us that we need to vote forward. Mark?
So what I think you're saying is, look, we've got these three petitions, they're before us, we've got to act on them, we do not have a master plan, we're not going to get one in the next 2 months.
Correct.
Let's try to move these through with the clear understanding that going forward we're going to be working on a master plan, hopefully.
We'll definitely be working on ordinances and guidelines, and this was an idea that came up in the last meeting because of what we heard from the consultants.
From what you're saying, it seems to me it makes perfectly good sense that we ought to be proactive, and frankly, it's probably better for the providers if we have conversations with them up front about where we think locations are good for the equipment, saves them a lot of hassle.
And the other thing I'll mention is that Alex Sadis also said, certainly he and the fire department would want to be involved because our emergency communication system depends upon having safe on poles and in the right locations throughout the city as well. So maybe there's a way to dovetail that. And in fact, we might consider putting poles up on certain city properties, since certainly aren't going to be enough locations on city properties alone, but that's something we might consider, and that then the city can rent space on those poles that we might buy.
So, when you say poles, you mean
monopoles?
Monopoles?
Yeah.
And just so I got this right, your consultant said that one 70-to-80-foot monopole equals 17 smaller?
He said approximately, but that is what he said. It's in our notes, right? I got that right. Okay.
Is that not... What you, I saw
you're not our, well, no, our consultant.
Okay. It's so fast and site specific that it's hard to reduce it to that sort of an algorithm.
Yeah. He said about. Okay. And, and what we have from him as a proposal for working with us is an hourly rate pretty much and a description of different levels of work. So we need to do better than that because I can't go to the city and say, oh, we really need this because I don't know what it is yet.
You don't need to tell me that the next two consultants in 3 weeks.
I don't see why we can't. But we're not working with them. We do not have a contract with anybody. This is one person, and I think the person in the room who knew the most.
I would not.
Probably not.
No, because part of it was we wanted someone who didn't have a connection to company or
independent.
No, many of them.
So
I just wanted to add to Deb's proposal, so to speak. And that, we're not proposing that we go ahead and figure out where these monopoles ought to be. It would be something that we would have to do in combination with the providers. I mean, we don't know what their coverage problems are, and so we know where our land is, and then you know where your problems are, and is there a match? And so that's the kind of conversation we'd be looking at.
Mm-hmm. So do.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are gaps that the IT department has identified and discussed with Verizon, and those are areas I know where some kind of build-out would be in the city's interest. Yeah, for public safety reasons in part.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd much rather be collaborative. I mean, we know that the citizens and the businesses in the city and the city itself needs and wants this service, and you need and want it to be continuous, and the FCC requires that you be able to do that. It's about figuring out, what kind of a visual and physical impact do we want it to have on the city, and how to minimize that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the first proposal before comment.
So I was going to mention the fact that when we talked about this, the reason we wanted to find locations in the city wasn't just for city service, but it could be a significant revenue source. And if we're putting these small towers everywhere, and someone else is getting the revenue, that doesn't make sense. So if we have to do it anyway, if we could find a way to use city buildings or monopoles it would make sense. And it would only make sense, we could sit in a room and decide, and it would have no effect. So we really do need all of the providers.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just a long term. That is not an extension of the wild.
I know
he does. That's why I'm telling him. But anyway, that's a long term. But anyway, right now, I think the guidelines are, I mean, I was okay with these changes, so we're not voting.
Well, yeah, so actually, I think it's time for Alan then to speak to what conditions.
Or are we on this?
Well, we need to vote on this.
We need to vote these, but we're voting them subject to certain conditions.
Right.
And the conditions are sort of the draft guidelines that we came up with.
Quick question. So, do you still have a hearing still open?
Yes.
Yes. But shouldn't we discuss the guidelines?
Yeah, don't worry.
Yes. Thank you. So. Oh, okay. So we have some revised copies of conditions. Most up-to-date copies of conditions, which probably aren't very different.
These are the edited ones.
These have been edited as agreed to by Verizon Wireless to this moment.
So what about we should go to these new ones? The ones I printed out today that you just sent.
Mm-hmm. That's what he sent me yesterday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No, I'm just looking at like the color of the small cell, and it doesn't look like it includes.
I don't know. Should we can we just go through
Alan,
Alan, do you want to lead us through these, or Jesse, do you want to lead us through these? And
I'll refer to Alan, as he's the original author. It's been definitely a collaborative effort since then, and late tweets to one or two late in the day that aren't reflected in here, but you can
exactly
those when we come to them.
Alan, is this the...
No, that's an earlier version.
There are quite a few that we've read for today.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Alan, you're on.
All right. Just by way of background, the city drafted a law department. In consultation with our subcommittee, drafted some conditions for these grants of location. We believe that the conditions are within the municipality's authority under state law, that we are also within our rights under federal law. We shared the draft, the earlier draft with Verizon Wireless, and we've worked together to try to reach agreement. Most of what you have before you, I can walk through them if you like.
Yes, I think we need to, because we're going to be attaching these to all three petitions if we approve each one.
From the top, the first condition is designed to assure that before work is done, that the petitioner has the okay from the pole owner to put the facilities on the pole. The way the pole owners operate, the petitioner is not going to necessarily have that kind of approval. At this stage, there's a sequence of things that the pole owners and the attachers follow, and it may be that the order comes out first, but subject to a condition that there not be any construction until that pole owner has signed off.
Yep.
So that will take care of that concern.
Can I just suggest something, Madam Chair? Sure. Like we do sometimes in land use, maybe we can each read each paragraph and then ask questions of Alan. If there's not questions, move on. Whatever's the most, I'm just trying to be efficient.
Well, might be just for other people here to hear.
Whatever.
We could also share.
Well, we could share them. I'll quickly run. Some of them are so easy. And then I'm going to ask Alan for information. So the second one is the small cell attachments will not include any lighting or blinking lights.
unless required under applicable federal or state law. That seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, as a practical matter, we think of the type. I'm not aware of any requirements.
Okay.
Attachments to it.
And that's good to know. A third is the small cell attachment shall comply with the noise control ordinance of the city of Newton. Of course, it would have to anyway, but that's just in here. In the event that it fails to comply with the ordinance, the petitioner shall install noise suppression equipment as needed to reduce noise emitted by such attachment to below applicable ordinance level. That seems pretty straightforward also.
Yeah, I think in discussions with Verizon Wireless, my understanding is that what's proposed at these locations don't involve noise. As far as the operating stage,
so during
construction, I suppose there might be some noise, but
no. I mean, there are no fans or anything like that. That's typically in the larger site.
No.
Okay. The color. We talked about this before. The next item is the color of the attachment shall be similar to existing equipment on the pole, the color of the pole, or another color reasonably satisfactory to the city council. It seemed to me that we talked more about having it be blending with the color of the pole, but I think that's what we talked about last time. Anybody else?
Well, I question whether we're going to have another color reasonably satisfactory to city council. I mean,
what does that mean?
We're not coming back here for that, so that doesn't help at all.
Right. Well, they show us something in advance, I suppose. But
this is going to be with the grant of location. So we grant a location.
Yeah,
we'd have to.
Who's going to enforce it? And that's really what it comes down to. So which department is the one responsible for enforcing it?
I think it should be engineering. Yeah. These conditions go to engineering with our approval.
Yes,
and
sign off on.
Okay. So each one of these things has to be met. Before they can issue their permit.
So can we say the color of the small cell attachment shall be similar to or blend with A, the existing equipment, or B, the color of the pole and get rid of C?
Yes. I think we can get rid of C.
So we could just say blend with,
I guess.
So. Is there any reason that you can't comply with A and B? Do you think?
I think that we changed probably.
Okay.
Do you have a standard color?
right now, the one I'm aware of is just like a light gray, like off-white light gray.
A cloud.
Similar to or blend with.
We're not going to get interior decorated.
All right, so we can get rid of Steve. Next one.
Okay. Next, small cell attachment shall not project over the public roadway or sidewalk beyond the berm or curb or otherwise interfere with the public use of the public way or sidewalk. Again, we talked about that last time. That's pretty straightforward. Anybody have any issues with that?
Is there one specifically here about height? Because what would this cover?
This only covers
extension. No, but I mean, so you don't want people bumping into it, or
we should have a minimum height.
I thought we did. Don't we have a minimum height?
Well, I think it's suggested here, but we need to follow EverSource's ground clearance standards, which is at least 8 feet, no more than 9 feet for the lowest capacity, which is the possible meters.
Okay.
But didn't we talk about in committee, wasn't there a 12-foot hat?
Did we talk about all different kinds of things, we talked about all kinds of things, but we don't have our design guidelines yet, so I don't know if engineering wants to speak to this.
Yeah, wasn't there?
But the meter is different from the cell, what do you call the
meter?
The antenna. So the meter has to be readable, is that it, by a person?
Without a truck.
Without 8 feet up.
No lower than 8 feet, but no higher than 9 feet is what I'm hearing.
If you look at page 2, it says the attachment's limited that specifically described in the plans identified in this order. So we have plans which presumably show the height.
Right. We do have plans, and they showed an 8-foot minimum.
Okay.
But for our guidelines.
For the meter.
Yeah,
I remember that.
And going forward, if you were to require a higher ground clearance, it might result in a taller pole. The other thing is there are some cities, I believe Cambridge is one, that prohibits meters on poles and essentially forces the utility to estimate what these kinds of facilities are going to consume by way of electricity. So that's not for tonight, but going forward, if there are concerns about the lowest facilities on the pole, could be considered.
There's a lot of work ahead in figuring out all the particulars. We do have the planning department working on the committee now. Rachel Black's been coming and begun to find some codes and standards in other communities.
And Alex Tudor was telling us about noise, and not noise with sound, but
RF noise,
like what's radio frequency, because at a certain point you can have overload or you can't. If there's too much, it'll throw things off. So I don't know how we measure that.
Not to provide that kind of interference. Plant interference is...
So you measure it with whatever's around it. And
I think you were describing that, if I can remember correctly, if a new carrier can't come in and position something within a certain distance of an existing carrier.
Right. But he was also talking about the public safety.
Well, and he didn't want it to interfere with any safety equipment either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The more we prepare, the less room there will be.
Mind
bending. Let's move on.
Right? Okay. So, we have the projection over the roadway. Small cell attachments shall not interfere with the operation and maintenance of any wires, cables, or equipment already attached to the pole as of the date of this order, including streetlights, cable, electrical, telecommunications facilities.
Can you make it including, comma, but not limited to, comma? Just so it's clear not just
streetlights already attached to the pole as of the date of this order shall not be moved unless required by the pole owners, and then only to the extent permitted under any applicable agreement between the pole owner and the city, or absent such an agreement, formally consented to by the Commissioner of Public Works. Signage already attached to the pole as of the date of this order shall not be moved without the prior written consent of the city department that controls the placement of the signage.
Let's see. That would be, two signs, no parking signs, that sort of thing.
Okay?
Yep.
Next, small cell attachment allowed under this order is limited to that specifically described on the plans identified in this order. I think we already went over that. Really, any increase in the number or height of small cell attachment components after small cell attachment construction shall be subject to city council approval in accordance with applicable law. No city council order is required for renewing, repairing, or replacing the small cell attachment. In the event that after the order and before construction, the position of a small cell attachment or component needs or is required to be moved, the petitioner shall submit any revisions to its plans to the Commissioner of Public Works, who may authorize the change so long as, the change does not reduce ground clearance or increase the height of the small cell attachment.
Do you want to add, this is like almost like a consistency rule. Mm-hmm. Do you want to add a sentence here that allows the Commissioner of Public Works to consult the Public Facilities Committee? Or no?
I don't know. Do we want that? Of course, he may always do that.
I understand that. I don't feel strongly about it because we're doing it for three polls, but maybe going forward. Might be
something we should think about.
You want to think about cost a little bit more here.
If the change is substantial and if it
requires
bringing it back.
What we tried to do here, parts of the condition track Chapter 166, Section 22,
mm-hmm.
Where if there's an increase in the number or height of the facility, that requires city council approval. So we put that in here. Section 22 also says that no council approval is required for renewing, repairing, or replacing the existing facilities. So we have that in there. then we try to address last situations where the order has been issued, and then Eversource tells the petitioner, no, you can't put this here, it's got to be, you know, 10 inches higher, or something like something that's within the footprint, if you will, of the facility, but it's slightly different than what the plan showed when the application was submitted. So we're trying to come up with some way to do that without having to. Yeah. That situation is not covered under Section 22. It doesn't require a council hearing.
I don't know about you, but I don't want that coming back.
I'll fine. I just put it out there.
I understand.
As a suggestion going forward, don't have to do it here.
Yeah.
But when you present something, haven't they already weighed in?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, okay. Unfortunately, it does. And to put a real world spin on it, we do have three sites that have already been approved by the committee and the council that have minor changes, and they are waiting. Two of them waiting since the fall to sort of resolve this and think if we can agree.
John can add to this.
Within 30 days after construction completion, the petitioner shall provide the City Council with as-built drawings of the small cell attachment in paper and electronic form. That's for the engineering department.
Yep.
Really, do you want to say they can provide the City Council with this, or shall provide the Department of Public Works? The small cell attachment shall comply with all applicable FCC regulations, including but not limited to regulations regarding radio frequency emissions. Petitioner shall provide the commissioner of the Department of Public Works, again, should this be inspectional services? Okay. Center of Inspectional Services with an annual certification of continued compliance with such FCC regulations regarding RF emissions. Okay. Next, small cell attachments shall be covered by a performance bond that the petitioner has agreed to execute in a form and amount satisfactory to the city to indemnify the city of Newton against any damage, cost, expense, and loss to which the city may be subject in consequence of the acts of negligence and net and the noble.
How about the acts and or omissions?
This is directly out of your order. Yes.
I was not actually worded, and I just had the same thought.
And that they should set up some kind of an electronic process for it so we don't have lots of papers lying around. I mean, Nadia, you could maybe tell, or somebody, you should tell John Lozek that.
I'd be so happy.
Maybe this is another thing he's going to have to do, but there needs to be something that's
going to
happen.
And where would the paper
No paper, all electronic.
Come. It would have to be electronic. I think we should strike and paper.
So, engineering has to review and approve the petition in order for it to go to ISD to get an electrical permit. Mm-hmm. All right? So you review to make sure that they're complying with FCC regulations.
Well, more as far as the public, ask, you know, the impact of the public
So you don't for this bullet item right here where we're saying it should go to the commissioner of ISD
for the FCC
certification. That mm-hmm. doesn't go back to engineering. No. That just
okay. Looking at the original grant application.
That just goes to the electrical inspector.
Correct.
Okay. Well, that's something internal for us to make sure of,
yeah,
not that we put
that in.
Yeah,
that was a good point.
Yeah.
Note of it.
Okay. Next is the performance bond. I understand that our ordinance has language in it that requires a performance bond. Is this exactly the language?
No, and we've had some discussion about this, and we're going to discuss it further.
There's something about the $10,000 bond in the ordinance, isn't that right?
Right, and we discussed whether that would mean a $10,000 bond per small cell attachment, which would be a problem.
Well, it is a base station.
Yeah, I mean, by comparison, a cable operator under the licenses has a bond requirement of between $50,000 and $100,000 to wire in the entire city. You know, so it's kind of disproportionate to $10,000.
I understand. So I'll just say, Alan and I talked about this earlier, and so we have an old ordinance that's written in a particular way. We don't know why. Maybe John knows why. But there's an amount of money, and it might be, I'm just guessing, so is it that technology has changed, and so now instead of one major installation, we have a million small ones?
Yeah, well, let me just tell you, when that contractor goes in to install a water utility service connection, they're required to get between $5,000 and $10,000 performance bond to guarantee that the restoration of the road and sidewalks will be done to city standards.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not done by him, we go to the bonding company and get the road come through that bond. ISD, I don't know if they have that performance bond made over there too. I can't really touch that.
Yeah, I mean, one question we had was whether the city just put in portion the performance bond part of the city code, you know, for all grants of location.
Well,
yeah,
I would
think
it sounds like not.
Yeah.
I think it's an issue. And if I may, the ordinance section that we're talking about here talks about a minimum $10,000 bond for an electrical or telephone line. So it's not just, you know, attached to a single pole, but the lines running through the city, which suggests, if you look at the language, I don't know whether it's funny to you, that, you know, when AT&T came into town however many years ago and strung up its lines, it had to do with at least a $10,000 bond for the entire city, which kind of supports what Alan said about the cable, the solar cable bond.
Okay.
And then another, just another point of comparison, just to sort of frame this up, we often see performance bonds, removal bonds through macro sites. If we put up a monopole and at some point, you know, it sees the wire, it has to come down, the bond covers on taking it down. And but for these, I think only, I told my colleagues today, and only one other town that has gotten small cell attachments permitted in has required a performance removal bond, and that was North Andover, which required a 10,000 bond that covered 34 facilities. So, you know, the same exact type of installation.
Okay.
So just
mm-hmm.
Kind of
50, and then Mark.
Yeah, one way of doing a performance bond might be to have the amount of the bond equal slightly more than any repair or replacement would cost, and it put language in it requiring that if you go into the bond, then the bond, if the amount of the bond has to be replaced, so that amount is always available in the bond.
Repair or replacement of.
For whatever the bond has to cover, if you have to go, if the city has to go into the bond or the bond has to be set down, then you're required to replace that those monies so that the bond stays the same. That way, you could have a single bond that would cover the entire city,
yeah.
But it would always be at a level so that the amount of money that would be needed for repair would be there.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that makes sense, and we sort of discussed that as a sort of global bond that
yeah.
We sort of would flow to whatever.
Right.
Okay.
So an issue might be, how do we do this now?
Yeah, so here's how I think we ought to do it now. I mean, I think there's a valid point here about not having bonds for each project. Why not one $10,000 bond for all three of these? And then we'll, as you're looking at this more globally, revisit whether that's an appropriate bond for everything in the city or if that number should go up to some level. But we just got to put something in there now. And
I think looking at the language, you can read this as saying anybody who comes into the city and puts wires on poles posts a $10,000 bond for any damage caused anywhere in the city. So the $10,000 might be sufficient for that purpose.
For now it might be, but I can't imagine that language that said 30 years ago, 40 years ago, putting a $10,000 bond, that's sufficient for us. I'm not at all comfortable with that.
Yeah.
But I want to move this forward, so I'd suggest $10,000 for these three projects, but you got to revisit it. Does that work? That work,
Madam Chair? I'm out of my league, so I'm assuming
that it works for you. Looking at this more closely, I think that the existing ordinance calls for a $10,000 bond period.
I know, but we need to amend the ordinance. That's
absolutely.
So let's just do the $10,000. We've got three.
You're saying it says for one, for each one, so you're saying.
Not 10,000 for each one.
Okay. All right. So we can do that.
We're calling it 10,000 for the city because the three of other way to do it. We'll be working under a $10,000 bond that has been posted. Because we can't attach a $10,000 bond provision to each one of the council orders.
All right, so let's do it first.
So you would be able to post the $10,000 bond and then work underneath that until we figure out how to rewrite our old ordinance specific to this technology.
The issue is definitely not whether Verizon Wireless can afford a $10,000 bond.
It's
more the fact that the ordinance does go to a citywide application or coverage for the bond as opposed to even just three of them. The initial petition is coming before this committee in 2 weeks, and will that be another $10,000 bond? At some point, it becomes burdensome and perhaps not necessarily in line with state law.
I think the intent now is to say one $10,000 bond, but we've got to look at our ordinance. We may amend our ordinance. If we amend our ordinance, we're going to comply with it. Simple as all that.
Okay, as long as we can make sure the language reflects the fact that we're paying a $10,000 bond for the three things.
I know that's not what you want, but I don't. But when you come in a couple of weeks, we'll have to then, if we've made progress from Alan, we'll look at it. We may amend our ordinance. Unlikely to amend it that quickly. I think at that point we probably have to say we're still stuck with the language we have. It's one single $10,000 bond. I mean, I think we have to, when it comes to us, we deal with it.
And I appreciate that. I guess there seems to be, to me, a difference between saying one single $10,000 bond and because of that one single $10,000 bond that applies to these three sites. If you say there's one single $10,000 bond, well,
the easy way out is to require compliance with the city code.
Fine.
Section 23-11.
That's fine with me, and then we can.
Okay.
Yeah. The interpretation right now that we're starting from Alan is one $10,000 bond. We can revise the code, in which case the bond is different.
So,
all right,
let's get on that.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
No, Alan,
you
have a task.
Yeah.
All right. So we're in the last one of page two.
Small cell attachment shall be placed and entertained in accordance with requirements and specifications of the latest editions of the NEC code, the National Electric Safety Code, and the engineering and construction standards of the full owners and applicable law.
Okay.
Straightforward to me.
Yep.
Next, small cell attachment shall be tagged or marked in accordance with engineering and construction standards, full owners and applicable law. That's straight to me. In the event that the pole is being removed and replaced by the pole owner's decision, shall transfer the small cell attachment to the replacement pole.
in accordance with pole attachment agreements between the petitioner and the pole owners, and any applicable joint user system.
What is
that? I don't know, what is that?
What is that?
Engine?
Yeah, it's the joint user process that the utilities and the cable operators use to sequence.
I would take that out.
From one pole to the other, you want to take it out?
Any applicable joint user system requirements, or something like that, but I wouldn't put a current one in there.
Take out the current.
Yeah.
Just put in the requirement.
Can we have a fee for failure to move the equipment in a timely fashion?
So that's the figure. That's the number.
The double pole thing.
I'll tell Doctor that's
what.
What?
You're gonna take that up in the working.
This is gonna be old, very old.
They're sitting this far to the side.
Yeah, we're gonna move along.
I think we talked about that. Engineering, I need to say this again because let's make sure we all understand this. So that. Engineering does a review, make sure that the petitioner has met all of the conditions as we're going to put them forward, and then makes their recommendation for approval to ISD. Then the wires inspector, or the electrical inspector, signs off on it after construction. Is that correct, John?
That's the problem that we need to be correct.
So, is there anything in here that you think is not going to be enforceable or covered by that process? Okay.
All right, we're good.
Almost, but there's one thing missing here. We had discussed in the draft set of conditions some time ago that, and you said you were willing at the time, that if you were going to come back to put more equipment on the pole, that you would not use the process that is allowed as though you have established a base station.
Yes.
You would be willing to come back to us to review essentially a new petition, assuming you're not simply replacing, you know, equipment with equipment, which is all.
Yes, absolutely.
So how did we move that one?
I don't know that it was actually included in here, but we definitely would suggest
discovered. On the second page, the wording is different, but basically what it says is the first full bullet. Any increase in the number or height of small cell attachment components.
I think we need to be more explicit. I hope you got to lay it right out very clear. There shall be no additional period.
Anything shall be subject to a new special
grant of location.
This is directly out of section 22. That's what the city council can require under state law.
But council's saying she's willing on behalf of a client to allow us to put something a little bit more rigorous in.
Yes, if I may, in addition to this, absolutely. And I think what I suggested was the last sprint agreement between Verizon Wireless and the City of Boston specifically includes language defining we agree that by attaching this small cell attachment here, not making this pole into a base station for purposes of people.
All right, let's put it in there. That will make you much happier.
You were very clear about that.
Okay, let's make that very clear. We still have an open public hearing. Is there anyone here who wants to speak for or against this particular petition? Do I have a motion in Ward 8 for approving this first location? Which is not in front of somebody's house, subject to all of these conditions plus
to the fact that it is not a basement.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Legally, technically speaking, it is.
So
well,
that's what I was saying.
No, but yeah,
we're
put in the condition.
So you're saying even if we have this condition in here, Congress has already said that it's technically.
So we agree that we are not going to go back and treat it as that.
Yeah, they're giving
that's all we can do.
That's
okay.
Okay. All right. So do I have the motion?
Reluctance, please. Yes. Subject to second call.
Just to make sure.
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. All in favor? We have six.
No, I'm going against it. I don't think we should be granting any of these. I know we're under a time constraint. I know we're working on these three.
Yep.
I don't think we should be granting any of these until we do the other item. So.
The other item?
Oh, the student item.
Student consultant.
Oh. Okay.
The whole time.
Well, that's going to take us a while.
Fine.
Yep. Okay. So we have one opposed or abstention?
Opposed.
Opposed. Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to read the next one into the record.
I mean, even if we took the other one up.
Sorry?
We took the theme. We couldn't do it.
No, we can't.
No,
we can't. So item number 423-16 is Telco Partnership DBA Verizon Wireless.
I think it's 281-16.
Okay, I'm sorry. 281-16. Telco petition for grant of location for wireless communication equipment at utility pole 2020, start at Sargent Street near the Sargent Street intersection, Ward 7.
I'll move it.
Okay, we have a motion.
We're subject to second call.
Subject to second call and
amended.
As amended by the set of conditions.
And the agreement noted on the record by counsel.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. All in favor, as amended. Okay, then we have six and one opposed. And 423-16 is again Verizon Wireless petitioning for the grant location to attach equipment to utility pole 405/24 adjacent to 93 Stevland Road. That's in Ward 8. Is that why you're here?
No.
Was it the previous one?
I'm sorry, they're all open.
So close the public hearing on 423-16.
And we have a vote.
And
we have a motion for that.
On 281-16, close the public hearing, and we have a vote. On 423-16, Sutherland Road, Ward 8, I need a motion for approval.
Close
the public hearing, because nobody wants to see. And I need a...
this is not right in front of
someone. Sutherland Road. Mr. Daglin, you have the drawings for Sutherland Road. I believe we looked at all of these.
They were both on an island corner.
Yeah.
I don't have that.
I know we reviewed all of these. The only one that was in front of a resident was the Dudley Road item.
I think they were both like not right in front of them.
It is at the intersection of Devon Road and Sutherland Road between two houses.
Between two houses.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was the one on the property line.
Yes,
in front of the property line. Okay. So for that one, I need another motion from Ward 8.
He's struggling. Ward 8 is struggling.
Would you like not to move it? I mean, you already moved the other one.
Yeah.
Want someone else to move it?
Sure.
I'll move it.
Okay.
You feel bad about this?
We have a motion
I think that about all of them.
Subject to the conditions and subject to second call pending the final language of the space station item. Okay. All in favor? We have six in favor and again one opposed. thank you. We do have one other item, but I believe we are done for this evening. We can move forward to full council in about a week and a half.
Great.
Monday evening.
Can I just ask one question?
Sure.
When we asked about relocating the one in front of Dudley Road,
yes,
and you did the whole study and you did the circles and said there's no other place, and now you're saying you'll just find another place. What?
Not exactly. That's still the preferred location, and it may be that the RF engineering folks will not find a suitable location, and then that will have to worry with the venue to come back around to it someday. That's the right spot. Whatever location we, assuming the RF folks find a location that is something that they want to bring forward, they'll still be bubbling, it won't be the one they want.
But there is an alternative. Because we were told there wasn't an alternative.
Well, there's not an alternative. I mean,
so that was preferable, but there was an alternative.
Right now there are no alternatives that are within the search ring that meet all of the criteria. That's why that one was the one. So
now what do you do? Do you triangulate it a different way to find out?
No, I think I just put it aside and get these through. I think that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, basically, we're trying to compromise and respect the butter's concerns and not on the basis of health effects of our emissions, but visual effects, even though, to be honest, there are many more naturally visible things to either side of the house in front of which that would have gone, that rendered that road less than scenic. But
okay,
you know, basically we know that that's...
So there's a plan B, it's just not...
Well,
good.
There may be a plan B. At this point, basically, we pull it back and we're going to look to see if there is a plan B. If there's no plan B, then I don't know whether... I don't know what happens.
Okay.
You can say, oh yeah, $2 over there, well, that's fine, and we should have come forward with that. At this point, that's not what I'm told by the RF
folks.
Okay. I have a basic question while we've got you here. I don't have Verizon on my cell phone, but I drop calls. And I'm wondering. I've heard that everybody drops calls in the Cold Spring Park area.
All carriers.
Do you know that you have coverage in that area? Is that a Verizon problem?
I don't know.
You're going to change carriers?
Okay.
That particular location will come back up.
I think we heard that there is a plan.
Not that particular location.
Well, no, it's true without prejudice, and they don't have another plan.
It's highly unlikely that that location will come back up, given the opposition that we face here, and we don't want to fight about it. It's really not going to get anybody anywhere. But as an attorney for my client, I have to withdraw without prejudice, because otherwise I'd be stating my practice.
Okay, thanks everybody.
36-17. This is Councilor Crossley Albright Lavin requesting an ordinance pursuant to Mass General Laws, Chapter 166, Section 22, Chapter 44, Section 53G,
the adoption of which would enable the City Council to acquire for peer review of grant implementation petitions, including proposed wireless communications equipment attached to pole structures in public way and on public land at the petitioner's expense, to assist the Council in deciding requested grants of location. At a recent meeting, we decided we did indeed want to do this, and Alan has come up with a draft. It is still under review in the law department, but in the interest of moving things forward, and we had time this evening, I thought, to begin this discussion. And Alan, do you have something you want like to lead with?
Sure. Yeah, we thought that the best way to do this was to model the ordinance after an existing city ordinance that has peer review for special permits. So that was existing code section 22-6. So what we did was try to customize where we needed to customize the grants of location. You know, the only body that considers the Mission City Council. So this is drafted in terms of the City Council as opposed to planning and development, you know, all the land, different procedures. So the redlining is basically redlining an existing code provision to convert it into a grant location peer review provision. The first page is pretty straightforward. Going over to the second page.
Can I ask you a question, Alan? Yeah. So you're saying that we as the City Council, sitting as the local authority, establish the fees. What mechanism is there for the City Council to establish fees?
That's what we do.
Well, what we've, these are the peer review fees.
No, but how are we, I mean, you talked then about rules and regulations. What rules and regulations, City Council, do we use to set fees for anything?
Yeah. There's a, all these things kind of fit together. We have an existing code provision that provides a $35 fee for grant of location petitions. There was an express interest in increasing that fee. That would require, you know, I think to play it straight under law, you would need to do some kind of a cost analysis of the work steps involved in processing and reviewing a grant of location application, be it wireless or anything.
I don't want to debate it in here, yeah. But I'm fully supportive of the concept. But I think the law department needs to help us think through the process that we're going to undertake as a city council to establish fees. I mean, is it going to be the public facilities committee? Is it going to be finance?
Yeah.
My
understanding is that the request to increase fees was sent to the finance committee.
Yeah. So we will periodically be asked to set fees for this work, and that could be revised at any time.
Well, this isn't the filing fee. This is the peer review.
Yeah.
This is the Mass General Law that we're accepting that allows us to require people to pay for peer reviews,
right.
Like they do at land use. That's what this is.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. I just that's fine. I just want to understand it.
Yeah.
That's all.
But the thing that we're talking about is going to finance. I'm hoping to allow $500 fee for each one of these. Grants of location.
This is we're accepting part of the municipal modernization.
All right, so that's what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Okay,
yep.
Fine. I understand that. And forgive me for being a little obtuse.
So, but this kind of so it's not really a fee in that case. It's just the amount will be exactly how much. Right, like when we do a traffic study.
Right.
This
isn't a fee. This is saying that they're going to have to pay for the peer review.
We're saying, someone can challenge the amount if they think it's unreasonable, and there's a process for it.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
So the fee is equal to the cost of doing that.
Let's just not call it a fee because we'll confuse it. We have another item. We did refer to finance, and there's some homework that has to be done to see how we can
justify
or justify the fee.
Other towns
and, and finance is going to come and recommend the fee somewhere between $200 and $500.
I think it may have to be called a fee in here, though. However, perhaps for some legal purposes.
Does it have to be called a fee?
It may. It may.
It's called a fee under the existing city code provision.
But not under the Municipal Modernization Act?
You know,
why don't we just suggest and while we read that, let them look at it. I mean, I think we just want to be on. You're right that from a colloquial point of view, we don't want to talk about it, fees.
Yeah.
But it may need to have that verbiage for certain code provisions.
Yeah, I mean, the safest thing seems to be the model after the existing code.
Right. So you have two questions for us on page two, basically, right?
Yeah, several questions.
All right. So where are they?
Okay, in the first full section, toward the end.
We're in page one or two.
Two. Okay. I put in a sentence about the appeal being made in writing and received by the city council. There's nothing like that sentence in the existing code provision, and that type of thing could be covered in separate council rules, which are also on a draft stage. So I suggest just taking that sentence out.
So this is a sentence that exists in the related special permit law.
No, the last sentence of that first full paragraph is not in the special permit code provision. So my suggestion would be to take it out and maybe handle it in a some rules. You know, which
are you working in rules?
Yeah. Yeah, there's kind of a process rule right now for these applications, and
there's
a section of it that deals with.
If you're trying to make it uniform, and you'd rather have uniform than put a different one in here, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's fine. Keep this on par with 22.6, we don't need this here, so I should just take it out.
Okay.
Can this be selected and deleted?
There's two other things. I've seen some ordinances or policies where they provide for adding to the original peer review fee if it turns out that the estimate was too low. That's not in section 22.6 right now. So it doesn't mean it can't be in here, but
why not put it in here?
Put it in, yeah.
If there's double the work, who's going to pay for it?
Right, then.
Okay, so I'll add some language on that. The last question was just the severability provision. I looked back at 22.6. It has the same severability provision.
Don't you always want to put that in case something, you know, the appeal period is viewed to be unconstitutional, but everything else stands?
It's going to come out in an executive order next week. No J.
And here, so let me show you how I want to do that. I'm going to try to get out of here.
Okay, so you have what you need to.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'd like to then hold this item.
Move to hold.
All in favor? It's unanimous. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And for the subcommittee, seems like we ought to be scheduling a meeting. I'm just going